we'll make a start. Apologies. I have two here from Councillor Timmins and the Director, Michael Lipsett. Any other apologies? The only thing I have under Chairman's remarks is, and I would like the officers maybe to send a letter of condolence to the family of the late Paul Strammy. Anyone who knew Paul in the district knew how dedicated he was to football in the area. He had a good distinguished career with Cliftonville Football Club and closer to home, Kilmore Rec. And it's just a very sad tragedy that Paul is no longer with us. So I would ask the officers to see that a letter would go to the family of the late Paul Strammy. Item 3, action sheets. We'll go through it. Declarations of interest. No. Item 3 now. Action sheets. Page 1. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4. Page 5. Page 6. Page 7. Page 8. Item 4 is the presentation by the Down Youth Council on the AFTAs, and I would like to welcome the Youth Forum here. You are very welcome along. We are, and over the years I've seen the great work what the AFTAs have done within the district. I've been at the awards, so I have at the Canal Court and that, and I have to say, you do excellent work, and we're looking forward to the presentation from Tiernan Laird, Alicia Bryden, and Matthew Reynolds. So, folks, I'll hand over to yourselves then to give your presentation.
There we go. Thank you. My name is Tiernan Laird and I'm the chairperson of the Down Area Youth Council. So we're a cross-community group which draws membership from a range of local schools including Down High, St Patrick's, Assumption, St Coleman's, St Mary's and De La Salle, as well as a number of members in higher education.
We're here tonight to talk about the event you're holding next year in the Millbrook Lodge Hotel in Bonhinch. This event is called the AFTAs, or the Youth and Future Talent Awards. This is an annual event ceremony which recognises the achievements of young people outside the academy, academic and sporting arenas. This has been running for 5 years now, and the brainchild of our colleagues in Newry and Moran Youth Council, and they have hosted Newry since it began. However, since the formation of Newry, Moran and Down Youth Council here in Dunpatrick, we are shadowing Newry and we are hosting the event.
The award categories are broken into seven categories. Each category has a first and second place. The seven categories are the Good Relations Award, the Young Carer Award, Voice of the Young People Award, Innovation and Creativity Award, Community Safety Award, Inspirational Young Person Award, and the New Inclusion Award. We have secured sponsorship for most of the costs and are still working to close all our additional issues in funding. Each category carries a prize of £100 along with a first place trophy and £50 for the runner-up. Our launch date has been set for the 17th of January 2018 and it will be held in the Carn Bain Resource Centre. We hope to have schools, youth organisations, voluntary groups and other representatives at the launch.
So one of our sponsors this year is Phoenix Gas, and I hope to use their funding to bring in the new category, which is the Inclusion Award. This may seem a bit ironic given the traffic problems around the local area have been anything but inclusive, but oh well. A thank you is in order to Phoenix and the Councillor Brown, who's liaised with them on our behalf. Now, it's been quite a short presentation, but to close, we'd like to thank you for listening to this and letting us be here. We hope to see you all at the launch in January and at the main event in March, and invites will be sent to you all in due course. We were hoping to include some councillors in the shortlisting process of award nominations, and that'll also be announced in due course. So, thank you for listening, and I'd like to welcome any questions to the floor. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Councillor Andrews?
First of all, I'd like to take this opportunity to thank you all for coming to this council this evening and giving us a bit of a background to what your hopes and aspirations are for the year ahead. And over the past few years since I've won the council, we've had various groups of young people who have come to the council and took part in debates and, you know, more or less a learning curve of how local democracy works. But within the past few years with YASTA and all, I've seen it firsthand. So many young people who might win an award on the night, but they are winners in their own right. So it's good to see such enthusiasm. And all I can say is I wish you the best of luck in your endeavours. And you can always be assured of support from councillors. You know, if there's ever anything that you need help with or queries, don't hesitate to get in touch with. There's 41 of us that no doubt will go the extra mile to give you a hand out. But thank you very much. Well done.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Yeah, just to echo that, thank you very much for coming here and speaking to us tonight, folks, and the rest of you for being here as well and raising awareness of the event. I know Nuri over the last couple of years has done a fantastic job of running the YASTAs, and you know previously it had been their baby, and I know you might feel like you've got big shoes to fill, but I have every confidence that Downpatrick will put on an event that will easily rival anything that's been done by Nuri before, and I have absolute faith in your ability to do that, and I'm pleased to have been a part of it so far, and I'm here for whatever sort of support you need along the way, and can't wait to see the event.
I too would like to congratulate you on stepping up to take on this event. It really will be a hard act to follow, but I'm sure you're up to the task. I'm delighted to hear you're going to follow on that same trend of asking councillors to be on the assessment panel. I've sat on about 3 assessment panels. It is a very hard task to do because there are so many inspirational young people out there doing things that no one is aware of. So I'm delighted to see the YASTAs now happening in Dunfermline. So congratulations, well done.
Councillor Martin. Yeah, just to echo the responses from everyone here. I'm a teacher as well as being a councillor, so I get to see young people in action every day, and I know the great things that young people are capable of. I've seen the YASTAs in Newry down through the year as well, and it has been very impressive. So just wish you the best luck, and just give us a shout if you need anything.
Again, just to echo what's been said already, but as a local Downpatrick councillor, it's brilliant to see that the Down Youth Council are taking the lead in this project, and I look forward to actually attending and seeing they're absolutely fantastic, so I'm sure that you're going to put it on first. Also, I work in youth service in the town. I'd work in the Patrician Youth Centre, and you know, being involved in some groups and seeing what happens on the ground, and for people to be recognised, for young people to be recognised and to get an achievement through our programmes and that, you know, it's a great experience for them, and it helps in their development, you know, emotionally, socially, personally. So good on you for running this event, and I'm sure that we'll give Nuri a good out of the money.
Councillor Killer.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to concur with the comments that have been made so far. I want to welcome you, the members of the Down Youth Council, for making your presentation. It's not very easy to make presentations in front of people, but you've done very well. I want to congratulate you on that. I certainly wish your Youth Council every success moving forward. And I hope your Yafters are as successful as the one in Newry and Mourne was. I've had involvement with that in the past. In fact, I sat in the judging panel 1 year. And I can tell you now, it's not easy. When you see the quality of the categories and you see the quality of nominees, it's a very high standard. And I've no doubt that Down will also be a very high standard as well. So I certainly wish you every success in the new year with the event. And you know, certainly if we can be any more help than we have been already, I'm more than happy to do that. But thanks again for coming tonight, okay?
Well, that just leaves me to once again thank you for coming along and giving your presentation. And it is good to see that it is starting to go around the district and you are going to the Millbrook. You said, you know, it's a good venue. It's within Sleaf Crib. You know, people think it's within my own electoral area, but it's actually the borderline at Sleaf Crib there. And I think you will put an excellent event on, and it's anything to go by previous years, you know. And you are a credit to this district, you know, that all sections of the community is working together, side by side, you know, and that sends out a strong message. So it does right across this district, that our young people can work together. But I would just like to thank you and wish you as well, and hopefully we'll have an invitation to the AFTA Awards when they take place.
So, I'd like to thank you again for letting us hijack your meeting, and we hope to see you both at the launch and at the event in March. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, sure, we'll go on through that. Just councillors, we'll move on. The other presentation, they haven't arrived yet, so we'll go to item 6, which is the P4 local action plan, and Janine will take that.
Yes, Chair. It's a report from the P4 partnership. It does require approval by AHC prior to the implementation of recommendations. So we're just looking for committee approval for those contained within.
Councillor Andrews?
Yes, I would only be too happy to propose that this committee approves the recommendations that's on the paper.
Councillor Burns, second. Full agreement. Item 7. Financial assistance. Janine again.
Yes, Chair. This paper details the financial assistance call we would like permission from the committee to proceed with in January 2018. It will be for spend post April 2018, so it's funding for the 18-19 financial year. So it's committee to consider and agree to open the financial assistance call. In doing so, implement some of the financial assistance review recommendations around, for example, the application and the administration, and finally to deliver information workshops that we normally roll out to complement financial assistance call opening.
Councillors, I would welcome this paper because one of the things it does is that last year there was a number of events that was taking place in and around Easter. And because the call was opened later, people were submitting at risk. So they were in relation to financial assistance. They didn't know whether they were going to get it or not. So hopefully this will deal with this, Janine, in relation to it. So it has to be welcomed. Councillor Burns.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I'll happily propose, or if you're proposing, I'll second that we do this. Just on financial assistance, on the previous financial assistance that we just approved, There was a number of people who made applications for different sports programs. I think it was a small application capped at about 2,500. And their applications were successful, but unfortunately they weren't high enough on the pecking order to get funded by council. It's been brought to my attention that some of these projects would be applicable under Awards for All. And I was going to ask the Assistant Director, can we have some of our staff and possibly do a quick assessment and see if these are easily, if we could sit down with the groups and help them to convert some of these unsuccessful applications. Even saying unsuccessful, they were successful, but just not high enough to up our pecking order. To see if the people we could fund them through Awards for All, or not us fund them, but Awards for All fund them, because they're all good projects, and I'm sure everybody in this chamber would like to see them still go ahead.
Yes, Chair, we can ask, because it is disappointing that they get over the mark in terms of being successful and had no funding at the end of that, and that we can ask officers, DEA coordinators, to sit down with groups and see what their plans are in light of the letter they've got out from council. So yes, we can have to do that.
Yes. Councillor Andrews.
Thanks so much, Chair. First of all, welcome to the paper, Janine, and thanks again for all the work that you do. But some of the concerns that I've heard from different groups and different people is the process of filling in forms. To some of them, it's like a mystery maze. You know, getting in an obstacle course and then not falling to the first hurdle. You know, and especially, you know, you get small groups, and Janine, you know yourself, you've worked closely with them over the years, but they find it very daunting. And the fact is, people say, can they not make the process a lot simpler and forms easy to understand? Because people would fill in the forms with every best text in the world and getting word back that they're not successful. And particularly small community groups are working on budgets of hundreds of pounds. You know, the fact is that they're having to go away a bit of outlay and there may be no guarantee of a return. But again, that's just some of the concerns I've picked up along the way. And also in relation to workshops, we've seen a good effect of the workshops, but only if more groups attended them. But I say the paper you have presented, it's a good one, and I will be supportive of it. But that's just my concerns.
Councillor Andrews, Janine has been saying earlier that she can confirm this, that the forms are going to be streamlined. You know that they are in the process of being streamlined, because we do know it's daunting, and people when they go, they turn away and they don't fill them, and they say, look, you know, for the sake of £500, you're sitting for hours filling in forms. But Janine has confirmed earlier that the will be streamlined.
Thank you, Chair. While I agree with all that has been said in the past, I would also encourage that while we're helping these groups to look for other sources of funds, and I'm thinking of the likes of Children in Need who also fund some of these very good youth projects, that we don't make it too simple, because we want to encourage these groups to go out and seek external funding, because every year our council budget is getting tighter and there is so much other funding applications out there. I would love to see the groups having the ability to go after all this other funding as well.
So, councillors, we're all in agreement then. Item 8, Janine again, the DEA 4 update, and we'll need a proposer and seconder for to adopt them. Proposed, Councillor Burns. Councillor Quinn. Happy enough? Item 9, strengthening the links between.
Sorry, I was just going to comment there on them. I thought to name a sentence. We actually had in my own community there the drug and alcohol awareness courses. I have to say, absolutely fantastic, really well done. I would have preferred and encouraged a higher attendance, but they can always come back. But it's something that's right there that could, any group, this girl will go to anybody and run that. In addition to that, the Action Council bus was cancelled because of the bad weather, but it's coming in. We've moved it now to the 10th of February. So, tell you that.
Thank you, Councillor Padraig. Item 9 is strengthening the links between the District Electorate, DEA, Fora, and Community Planning. Janine again.
Yes, Chair. This report summarises the recommendations arising from two previous consultation workshops with members and key stakeholders. They're detailed within the report. The workshops explored the roles of the DEAs and their relationships both internally in the council and externally with community plan and partners. You can see from the report that some of the recommendations have already been progressed through the community plan and partnership, and approval was provided for all of the recommendations contained within 2.3 of the report. We are in front of AHC tonight seeking approval for the recommendations in section 2.4 of the report. Basically, we have been asked to look for an operational budget for each of the DEAs and for resources to cover the main issues raised, which were to enhance communication and to continue to support capacity building initiatives.
Councillor Enright.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'd welcome any attempt to strengthen links between the DEAs and the Community Planning Forum. But I would say that certainly in our DEA, and I'm chairperson of our DEA at the moment, there has been an ongoing consensus that not having the master plans for each area under the DEA has substantially weakened the DEAs compared to the way they used to be in the old council. And I think it does need to be said and said again. It's a constant struggle to have projects in our area picked up properly because councillors are sitting in judgment over projects in our area who weren't elected to represent our area, and it's a big ongoing problem. And I know we haven't tackled it before, but unsuccessfully, but I think at some stage we're going to have to face it and see how that issue can be addressed. Thank you.
Councillor Brown.
Thanks, Chair. Just on the subject of communication, may not correlate directly to the report, but Janine, I'd just like to ask whether consideration has been given to DEA coordinators being given their own social media pages to coordinate events and promote their activity and so on. I know some of the feedback we got from both staff and from community members was very hard to know when there was events going on specifically in their DEA when everything was channeled just through the main NMD social media accounts, which had a huge deluge of information every day. So I was wondering if you'd given that any consideration as yet.
Through the chair, yes, and I know that you had sent correspondence previously to Dorina Carville, so we have convened an officer meeting on the back of that correspondence. Unfortunately, the marketing section weren't able to attend last Thursday, so we have another date in the diary, and we are looking for some type of creative effort that we can within the DEA world work alongside council and the protocols in place, but communicate more creatively with the community and voluntary sector. So yes, I'll keep you updated once we've met with marketing.
Councillor Burns.
Yeah, Chair, the paper that's in front of us gets at the very crux of one of the biggest problems we have with the community planning process. Within community planning, the whole idea is that we can better work in partnership to get better results for the money that we spend in an area. We have a big problem in this part of the world with people working in silos and doing things just as they've always done it before and getting the same results constantly. And that's what we're trying to address at community planning. So as part of that, to try and make community planning work, one of the big things we've had, and I think it's come through in every consultation that certainly I've ever been at across the district, is that they need some sort of the public, Joe Public, if you will, needs some sort of a win, something they can turn around and say, yes, that's something worthwhile. I'm glad we went and engaged with the agencies, and glad we went and talked to the DEA fora, and glad we went and communicated our problem here because there's a solution. And I think what this budget will allow us to do, and it's certainly something that the Sleeve Group councillors have been very much in favour of at our DEA fora, is it will allow us to have a budget for them quick wins that we don't have to try and allocate that money back to a funding stream like PACE or like that. You know, it can be something we're doing because it's addressing something in our action plan, something that has been brought up, but it's a quick response money that we can use and spend in a proactive way. So, for instance, in our DEA, when we were lucky enough to have Parkrun come to Castle Allen,
We funded a water for the first event, which was a really good thing to be doing. It allowed the DEA members a bit of publicity, and it was a good news story. But we had to try and match that at that time to a funding stream that existed in council. This will allow us a wee bit of a play budget that we can turn around and say, okay, if we need £200 for bottles of water for something like that, we can do it. So I think all in all, it's a very good idea. It's the first stepping stone in us sort of reaching out and trying to do things slightly off book, and I think it's a good news story, so I'm happy to propose it.
Councillor Andrews.
Thanks very much, Chair. And first of all, again, it's sort of a good news story. In fact, it's good to see that more resources are being made available to the DEAs. You know, similar to the counterparts in the Republic, the municipal districts, they are a major player in local government, and I think their roles will be enhanced furthermore over the years. So I think with the extra resources, it's given them a bit more teeth and more responsibilities. And again, as I said earlier, it's been a focal point for communities. But I must say, whenever I was at Antrim and Newton Abbey Borough Council at a NILGA meeting, the way the Antrim and Newton Abbey Councils had it, they allocated a region of £100,000 per annum for the 7 DEAs in their ward. You know, and maybe we could look at Antrim and Newton Abbey, how they operate with their DEAs. You know, that's work for another day, but with what we have before us, again, it's good to see money been put in, and I'd only be too glad to second the proposal. Thank you very much, Chair.
All in agreement? Oh, Councillor Quinn.
Yes, quite. I agree with and welcome the statements made by the other councillors here. I think we have still missed a wee bit of a gap. The community representatives on our DEA forum at times are being lost slightly, and I think we need to work out a programme that helps them engage better with the DEA Corps, but also to let the rest of the community know that these people are giving up their time to represent the groups in their area. They wouldn't be on the DEA Corps unless they were representing a number of groups. And they're doing quite a strenuous job, some of them on top of their full-time employment. And I think we need to do all we can to help them ease into this task and understand the task that we're taking on.
Thank you, Councillor. So, is there all in agreement there? Item 10, additional funding from the Department for Communities for the Frontline Advice Services. And Janine will take this one.
Yes, Chair. Notification from DFC that we can draw down additional funding of almost £14,500 towards the delivery of advice services in the district. So we're looking for committee approval tonight to award citizens advice this revenue.
Proposed.
We need it.
Who proposed? Councillor Quinn. Seconder. Councillor Andrews. All in agreement?
Yes.
No. Item 11. Vacant crash space at Newry Leisure Centre. And Roland will take this one.
Yes, Chair, and details set out in the report. Really looking for permission from the committee to go back out for expressions of interest for this space that we have in Newry Leisure Centre.
Councillor Murray proposed. Seconder. Councillor Lockhart. All in agreement? Item 12 is the Sunday opening hours, indoor leisure.
Yes, Chair, we've set out the details following previous discussions at this forum. Recommendations are that we continue with the early openings at DLC and ALC and continue to monitor over the next 6 to 12 months. Continue to gauge customer feedback and then present a further paper back to this committee at some point within the next 6 to 12 months. Details of the survey respondents are contained within the appendix.
Councillor Burns.
Chair, propose the operative recommendation.
Second up. Second, Chair.
Second. Councillor Brown.
Thanks, Chair. In terms of the feedback, what form did that take and how will the community be able to go about answering that in the future? Is it a forum in the leisure centres or what? And also, I think the last meeting I asked whether any economic analysis had been done of the potential income from opening the centres longer. Has that been carried out?
Yeah, well, what we were able to do is the respondents that we got were done through both hard copy and, sorry, just to answer your first question, but hard copy and online. So we continue to operate that through the centres. In terms of the financial assessment, the actual respondents was very low. Some of the centres would be only 1% of our expected weekly users responded to the survey. So it's very difficult to do a detailed analysis. Now, approximately half of those who did respond were already existing members. So they would not likely to incur any additional income. Because obviously the membership would include that rate. So the income would be relatively low, but we don't know for sure, so it wouldn't be a robust statement to say one way or the other what the income would be. So I think what we're saying is we need to monitor this, we need to assess how it goes on the two centres which we are opening earlier, and then come back to allow members to make a further decision on it.
Councillor Patrick.
Okay, just with regard to the staff, survey, I know that there's no one responded from the Downpatrick, is that just because it's closed? And there was nobody from the Newry one responded, but as well as that, what would we be thinking of doing? I know it's a very low number of doing in terms of that the staff wouldn't like to see it opening and wouldn't be prepared to work. So.
You know, well, certainly, maybe it's just not clarified there, but the reason why there are no respondents for Downpatrick and Newry is because the council's already decided to open those facilities on the Sunday.
Okay.
So
they weren't asked?
Correct.
Okay. But the other ones, I mean, how do we manage that going forward?
Well, it would be a matter for the council to decide should they wish to do this in the future, and then it would be up to officers and management to change the terms and conditions and contract the hours of those staff.
But working with them as a team?
Absolutely.
Brilliant, thank you.
Happy enough then. You've heard the proposal, Councillor Burns, and second by Councillor Taylor. Agreement, yes. Item 13, Warren Point Tennis Club, lease of lands, Milltown Recreation Site, Warren Point.
Yes, Chair, again, details in the report. This is an existing tenant, so the recommendation is to enter in a 3-year lease agreement as it was assessed by LPS, and that keeps us in line with the council's asset management review.
I propose, Chair.
Councillor Taylor proposed. Do we have a seconder? Councillor Murray. Happy enough, all in agreement?
Yes.
Item 14, booking request for Newry Leisure Centre.
Yes, Chair. Again, details set out within the report. In summary, we are seeking approval of the committee to not only proceed with the booking request, which we do usually without the committee, but this bookie has requested a licence for this event. So officers recommend that we do proceed with this event. Newry Leisure Centre, the size and style and location of the facility, should be able to accommodate these types of large public events. So, officer's recommendation is that we approve this recommendation.
Councillor Patrick.
Okay, it's just slightly deviated from that, if you'll bear with me. Is that all right? Billy?
Yes, please.
Okay. It's just that there's a notice now in Kilburnie Park, and the gate's chained on it, due for where the barbecue section is. And it said this needs to be, you need to contact the office or the officers, whatever, for booking of that. I think it needs to be made clear to people that the reason why the barbecue section is now cordoned off with a chain and lock is obviously due to insurance or whatever, because people are obviously just using it without having the booking, but it never was locked up before, but now it is locked up, or maybe somebody can explain that.
I'm not 100% sure. I know that is an ERT facility, but we can certainly relay that back to the tourism department.
The officer will find that out for you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Councillor Burns.
Chair, back to the item requested there, I'm happy to propose the officer's recommendation. I could possibly further recommend that if they are installing a cage, it might be something that you and Terry might think of your next charity event. It would be nice to see the cage fighting.
Winner takes all Conor McGregor.
Councillor Quinn. Yes, Chair, I would welcome, I would second this proposal and welcome this event to Newry. Because I think as we had talked about and debated when the leisure centre was being planned, that we would be looking to site larger events into our area, both to give our young people the experience, but also I could see it being a good income stream at some stage for us as a council. So I'm very happy to second this.
Councillor Quinn, I would agree with your sentiments. It's something that I would totally support. Reason being, you know, we're able to utilise our buildings more. As you said, there are more people coming through, is more revenue for the council. If we're going to give occasional licences, you know, more people will book, because, as you know, a lot of these events and functions and that, people do maybe want to have the occasional license. They're maybe not booking because in the past, for some reason, they couldn't get a license. But this allows people then they can go, because we have a building there, state of the art building. So we do excellent facility, and if we can utilise it to its full potential, that's only good for this council, and it's good for the ratepayer of the district. So it is. Councillor Andrews.
Well, just be brief. I concur with the previous remarks. No, it is. When I went to the Newry Leisure Centre for the first time, I was overwhelmed by the facilities that are on offer and the sheer size of the buildings. And, you know, I'd say this is probably the first of its type in the new centre, so it'll be at least we can learn from the experiences gained with this event. And I'd say hopefully it'll be the first of many, you know. And when Downpatrick opens its doors next year, it could be again, as what Councillor Walker and others have said, it could bring in a revenue stream for the council and showcase our facilities that are on offer. So the papers are welcomed.
Thank you, Councillor Walker. So, heard the proposal, second, all in agreement? Right. Item 15. Owen will take this.
Thanks, Chair. This item was deferred from last month, members, that it didn't download very clearly on Minipad, so I had it sent out to everybody. Climate NA have asked us to give an idea of activities that were completed, underway, or scheduled before 2024 to inform their Northern Ireland Climate Change Adaptation Programmes. So we're looking for just approval to return. We have returned the attached response on the condition that it had to be approved by Council, first of all. So it's just that we can inform them that it has been approved.
Councillor Enright.
Yeah, thanks, Chairperson. It was good to get a version I could read. There were a couple of significant missings which I wanted to mention and ask to be included. First and foremost, under the heading of disruption to business and supply chains, it was one of the headings the report required to cover. I know that Leo Varadkar in the Republic and Nicola Sturgeon in Scotland have announced the phasing out of petrol and diesel cars, along with most of the rest of the European countries, by 2030. And Theresa May has announced it, the same thing for England for 2040. That means our development plan would need to be advised by Stormont, by the civil service, as to which and what approach we're going to be taking. Clearly in Scotland, they have a very well thought out plan to have large numbers of charging points all over Scotland. Similarly, we're going to have to figure out in our development plan what we're going to do with the existing diesel and petrol stations, which will presumably gradually wither away. More importantly, there'll have to be an enormous increase in local employment and local revenue from generating the electricity that will be required locally. There is likely to be a very substantial increase in the rate space from businesses who are generating all this additional power. So there's a very significant disruption to businesses and the supply chain that needs to be taken into account. And to the best of my knowledge, councils in Northern Ireland have not been advised on the approach to take on this in the same way that councils in Scotland are being advised. So it's very much changing the way in which we live. A second point would be under three other headings, where people and the built environment, secondly food security, and thirdly natural capital. I know from sitting on the Drainage and Flooding Council here for Council in Northern Ireland that we're currently planning for 2 feet of sea level rise over the next 80 years, but I'm also equally aware that the UN is revising this to between 1 and 2 meters. Now, given the fact that we have 160 kilometers of coastline and most of our towns are on the coast, we need some advice from Stormont, from central government, as to how we're going to tackle this, what funds will be available. Do we need to replan our coastal towns? Do we need to identify those areas where people will be moved to? How will it be financed? What way will we move people from seafront facing homes to more protected homes? There's two very big areas that will require major disruption to the way in which we live in South Down over the next 15 to 80 years, and certainly we need, councils need guidance in these areas. It's not all negatives, there are significant deployment prospects as well, but certainly there are two areas that can't be ignored, and they don't seem to be within the current feedback document.
Certainly for a point. However, what they asked us for was information on stuff that we were doing or had planned to do.
Councillor Andrews.
Thanks very much. And again, with a meeting this afternoon of the Sustainable Energy Working Group, and with an excellent presentation from Sustainable NI. He gave a very interesting talk on their role and the various projects that they're involved with, and the lack of conservation with energy. And I know Councillor NI did raise a few interesting points earlier on this afternoon. You know, and maybe for the benefit of this committee, if an invitation would be extended to that organisation to come along to give us a presentation on what they've laid out today, because there's a wide raft of issues there that will affect councils in the coming years whenever fossil fuels and dependence on those type of fuels are decreasing and everybody's moving towards renewable energy. So I'd only be too happy. I'd like to propose the recommendations of the paper, but also on the context of sending an invitation to Sustainable NI to come along to a future committee meeting for a presentation.
Proposed by Councillor Andrews, we have a second. Councillor Enright. So all in agreement? Item 16, request for aged sector platform to host the local pensioners' parliament.
Thanks, Chair. We've had a request from Northern Ireland Pensioners Parliament to facilitate a local pensioners parliament. In 2016, they had pensioners parliaments in the new 11 council areas, and they're looking to do it again. In the interim, they have lost a lot of funding that they've had, so they've asked for the council to help facilitate this. I've said the resource implication is £3,000, but that's a maximum. They'll have to explain to us what they need to spend in facilitating this. So we're just looking for the recommendation that we facilitate a local setting of the pensioners' parliament.
Councillor Quinn proposed, Chair, but also to say that in the past, Newry and Mourne were very well looked after with by the Senior Centres Consortium and had quite a comprehensive list of the senior groups within the area. At that time, Down Patrick just didn't seem to have the same list compiled. So I would ask that maybe our council could compile some kind of a list of the senior groups in the Down Patrick area so that we can make them aware when these type of events are happening. Because, as we all know, the seniors are strapped for cash and find it very hard to attract grants and funds to run these programmes for themselves. Thank you, Chair.
Councillor Andrews.
Thanks very much. And I say the Northern Ireland Pensioners Parliament, it is a very valuable forum for the people that they represent, and especially more so now that we see welfare reform coming down the lane with the likes of a lot of benefits and entitlements being cut back, and people find it hard to make ends meet. And I think whatever financial outlay involved with this, it's a small price to pay for such an excellent organisation. You know, I went along to a couple of meetings. In fact, I think there was a panel of MLAs and councillors and at the previous occasion in the Great Hall in Down Patrick, and I gave an opportunity for representatives, should I say, to voice their concerns and have their say. So I would strongly urge that we do go away and support the organisation of the local sitting of the Pensioners Parliament. It's a great body, and they should be getting every help and encouragement possible from us and other authorities across Northern Ireland.
Owen, on Councillor Quinn's query, we probably have plenty of information now. We have an AIDS-friendly strategic alliance and the County Down Rural Network have also set up an AIDS-friendly forum that the two of them are linked, so it's a Newry Morning Down, sort of older people's AIDS-friendly alliance. So I would think, certainly if you need, we have plenty of information as to old people's groups, etc. now. So.
I would also welcome this proposal here because I do think it's a worthwhile mechanism for our pensioners. I attended one a while back, maybe a couple of years now, in Stormont, when they met at Stormont. I was invited up, so I was, and you know, they do a lot of good work, so they do, and it has to be welcomed. So you've heard the proposal and the seconder. All in agreement? I feel like it, Brian. Item 17, the appointment, the public analysis.
Thanks, Chair. The council, we're asking here that the council be to formally appoint the named people. In order that we have a contract with a company who would carry out through the analysis set for us. In order for that, for the results to be used in evidence, the people have to be formally appointed. So we're just asking that it's agreed that those seven named people are formally appointed.
Proposed.
Councillor Burns.
I just want to ask a wee question, Alvin, in relation to what sort of role do these people, I'm not taking that away from their character or whatever, but what sort of role do these people do, and would it not be more beneficial to the ratepayer if the work could have been carried out in-house instead of going external? But just like the
It's not the sort of work that there'd be any ability to carry it in. And this is a proper UCAS accredited laboratory. You see the list of letters after all their names. Unfortunately, we don't have anybody like that. So.
Well, that's well. Second the proposal then. I just. Okay, thank you.
Councillor Burns, you've already been in there.
I'm about to declare an interest on the next item. I'm presuming you're finished with that one.
Yes.
Sorry, Joe, I didn't realise Castlewellan was on the step thing, so I'll declare an interest.
Right, well, councillors 18, 19, 20, and 21 are for noting only. Does anyone have any issue within them?
Just 21.
Play strategy.
Yourself. Sir, thank you, Chair. Just really in relation to the consultation process leading up into the play strategy, it's more to do with the transformation section, just because they're obviously probably quite a tricky band because they're neither one nor the other. I suppose really just what sort of publicity is going to lead into the public consultation, and what sort of changes can be affected, or what kind of, you know, what can the consultation maybe develop in response to that? Just because I'm aware that, you know, it can be either to just keep parts of it or completely change these areas or stuff. Thank you.
Yes, Chair. I mean, they will be publicised. I can assure that, and we've actually commenced consultation on one of the sites currently, so it's been well voiced within the local community through electronic means, social media, contacting local community groups and so on. So we have been working to try and get as many people's views as we can. In relation to the transformation itself, so this is where sites have been identified as essentially redundant. They have no further use. There is a small budget allocated for transformation at these locations. So where there is very limited or no play equipment, you could perhaps look at maybe grassing that area over, maybe installing a small summer seat. There may be elderly people there who still bring their grandchildren to that area, so you could maybe look at maybe one sort of wee toddler swing. That's the type of thing that we could look at within the budget that's available.
All right, Councillor.
So, probably enough then, we'll move back to item 5. And presentation by Contact NI, the Suicide Prevention Bill, and I would like to welcome up Fergus Comiskey.
Very late, Fergus Comiskey.
No, you're okay.
Never forget
and threw down Padraic.
You're a little schizophrenic, it seems to me, with the amalgamation of all these councils, Newry and Mourne, and now John Patrick, you're now Newry, Mourne, and Down District Council. I am head of this parish. I was moved to the border old days in Crossland then, and worked for Newry and Mourne District Council at the time, only 35 years ago, not a year yet. But tonight I'm here to speak about our proposal for a suicide prevention bill. I talked for maybe 10 minutes or so. That's okay.
About 10
I'd be really very appreciative of conversation with you then, and to Q&A, honestly, if you're all right with that. Let me just start with comments, as I say. I'm a recovering youth worker and psychotherapist, if the truth be told. And I currently lead contact, and we provide the Lifeline Service for all them. You may have heard of the Lifeline Service, the 24/7 crisis helpline with face-to-face counseling available within a week, no waiting list whatsoever. And in the 10 years we've run the service, there have been 54,000 people have used the service directly, and 36,000 of those have had face-to-face counselling. So we've been busy. And we know a bit about this issue, a lot more now than we did 10 years ago, of suicide prevention. And really what we discovered very early on in the work was that lots of people were accessing services, and lots of people were not accessing services. There's great difficulty in finding one way to gain access to the right kind of support at a time of crisis. And I'm teaching Granny how to stuff eggs, really, speaking to the local authority representatives, both staff and elected members, because the people who come knocking on your door in terms of your surgeries in the community are people who are often facing crisis. They've often been around the rings on lots of other issues and have come to you because they're last resort. Or they come to you at a time of frustration when they're really worried about somebody in their work or in their community or in their family. And very few of you, if any, at this stage in your careers, will not have an opportunity to have dealt with a serious crisis in your own family's life and where this issue of suicide has actually come and knocked on your door. We have the highest suicide death rate in the north of any region in the UK that are the Republic of Ireland. We have amongst the highest in all of the developed nations in the OECD states for suicide death rate. And it's been referred to as a national catastrophe, a national disaster, but it's also described in terms of the death rate. And really, we have had a situation in the north whereby our suicide death rate over the last 10 years has gone in this direction and continues to go in this direction. We have had a 20% increase in suicide death rate at a time when our nearest neighbours, in terms of the UK, and probably our nearest neighbours culturally, no matter what anybody says about the Isle of Ireland, in the corridor between the Lagan Valley and the Clyde Valley, we probably have much more in common with the deindustrialization, the maximum culture, the impact of alcohol, the overall death rate from other forms of morbidity with Scotland than we have with anywhere else in the UK. And in Scotland, they've experienced a 10% drop in the death rate in the same 10 years. So we've had a yawning gap here between ourselves and one of our neighbours in the Celtic Fringe, where the statistics and the surveillance are really as good as they are here. We know about the suicide death rate in Scotland. We know about the suicide death rate here because we record it extraordinarily well. It's not so fantastically well recorded in the public because their coronial system is largely part-timers, the 40 corners in 34 are tied here in the north. All of ours are full-time and professional. So it's very difficult to get a suicide rating that can be regarded as completely accurate. Whereas between ourselves and Scotland, we can say that the young examples here is 30%. There's a 30% greater death rate here than in Scotland. So we have got something to say about this and some questions to raise about it. And we really feel as though if you took the analogy of the death rate in relation to the political conflict, or the death rate on the roads from car crashes, they're now regarded as car crashes, not road traffic accidents any longer. You notice the difference in how that's been referred to under the same year. It's said that in the car crashes where there are serious injuries and deaths. We have driven the death rate down as a result of the peace process for the political conflict to the point whereby there are very few, any deaths most years since the the death rate on our roads in the mid to late 70s, at exactly the same time that our death rate in relation to the British conflict was at its worst, we have in the region of 270 deaths in 1977. And we have driven that death rate down to an average of under the 19 mark now on our roads. How did we do that? How did we change the culture of complacency in our lives about the impossibility of bringing our death rate down? Is it that the roads have got to hold up better? Yes, they've got to hold up better. Is it the cars and the roads are hold up more well managed, serviced, MOT and support? Yes, that's true. But the biggest thing that's over a decade down the road is to change the culture of drinking and driving, changing the culture of speeding in places where speed should not take place, and changing the culture where it became a possibility. We didn't do that overnight. We did it by a mixture of mobilizing energy around it, mostly driven by families who experience great loss. We did it by education through great programs in public education, terms of advertising and so forth. And we legislated, ultimately we legislated. Now we couldn't have changed the attitudes and systems and the educational processes with legislation on our own. If that had been the case, we'd create legislation on our books in relation to inciting racial hatred and inciting sectarian hatred long before the trouble struck. But we would have needed to have locked up just about everybody, you know, a whole lot of our neighbours, a lot of political leaders who were actually drag the death rate down in that kind of way with legislation alone in relation to the political conflict. What it took was education, a process, mobilisation, mass movements, all political parties working with each other, and the support of the US, the UK, and the EU to bring about driving down the death rate as a result of this. In relation to one of the last taboos we had before, suicide and suicide, we've only begun to speak about suicide openly, properly, in the last 10 to 15 years. Still, people use terms like, well, you wouldn't do something stupid, as opposed to, have you been thinking about suicide? So we're still not using language that penetrates and cuts to the stigma, and cuts to the whatever you say, nothing happens to them. It still has a taboo effect attached to it. So we believe, now that we have got a suicide prevention strategy that's been running for the last 10 years, and my organization and the Lifeline Service that is 95% of our business, it costs $3.5 million a year, it's 50% of the suicide prevention strategy. We've had 10 years of the suicide prevention strategy, experimenting with what worked, and we've discovered some of what worked and what doesn't. If you can get someone in the crisis, the support they need to get through the crisis, suicidal thinking is episodic and intense and it passes. Yeah? That's what we know about. One of the myths is that if somebody suicides today, they will always be suicidal. If somebody is thinking about suicide, then that chances are they're passing upon it. And if somebody is intent on suicide, there's nothing we can do about it. And that drives a certain kind of complacency in our culture around our thinking of suicide. It's a myth. Those three elements are just spoken to are a myth. Suicide is preventable. The World Health Organization has just about 2014 declared suicide. Yeah. Now, they declared in 2002 that road traffic deaths by road crashes were preventable. Did we know that road traffic deaths were preventable before 2002? Of course we did. But it took the confidence, you know, the tremendous confidence of that mobilization, education process, legislation process that drove the death rate down on the roads for the World Health Organization to declare death on the roads was preventable. It took us to 2014 and 28 nation states to develop suicide prevention strategies, and the knowledge and the research and the practices that come from that, and the confidence from families who have the lived experience of bereavement of suicide and their frustration with those strategies to enable the World Health Organization to declare definitively that suicide is preventable. Now, suicide is preventable. Which suicide is preventable? this number or this number are all doable. So we have to believe that the best researchers on the planet, on this team, from our practice, from the tens of thousands of families who've had a loved one who's been active in suicide, who have not gone on to take their lives, and have gone on to recover, have gone on to contribute to the suicide prevention movement. The suicide is preventable until the last moment of life in 100% of the suicide. Well, that really means that for the rest of us, when we're not in high school, and we need the chance to note and observe someone who is, that we can intervene in a way that could make an enormous difference to guide suicide measures. And for that, we believe we can put it out as a feather to the wind just earlier in the year with our suicide prevention bill proposal. You know how long it's been since we have legislated for suicide prevention on these items? In Britain, 1961 was the last thing we had. I'm 58 years old, was born in 1959. So 2 years after my birth was the last thing we had. And actually what we did was we got into Suicide Act, as it was unfortunately referred to, and it made assisting suicide illegal, but it decriminalized suicide. And it also provided support and took some of the stigma away, and it took the opprobrium and the shame there was attached to suicide. That term committing suicide is a trying process. It was also a sin, a mortal sin in some religious belief systems that resulted in the loved ones who were deceased by suicide not being buried in the country. So that changed in the last 46 years. But there's still that legacy residue of stigma attached. And we believe until we legislate, we'll now mobilize the energy to educate sufficiently, to find ways to fill in the gap. And there's an enormous gap between services during suicide prevention. Because there's a lot of watchful waiting that goes on. There's, you know, testing the real McCoy in terms of crisis. There are waiting lists just about everywhere. And really, that works against what we've learned nationally and internationally in the suicide prevention strategy. So the better the winner we put out earlier in the year, we've been around almost all of the district council. We had a couple of breakfasts this morning with Belfast and Derry, and council chief executives and members of council chambers invited us to come and speak. So this is the second last the council will speak to. We've spoken to the city that delivered in the early in the year. And we really want you to consider this and possibly consider, you know, your thinking and your practice and your desire around how you might lobby to support our campaign for changing the law. Change the law not just for the Assembly here, but for all of the UK and the whole of the island. This law should and could be applicable in all our jurisdictions on the island, because I think this is so awful, and it's a marvellous way to begin to address it. We believe there should be a duty of candour, there should be a duty of confidence, and a duty to cooperate amongst all those who provide the service. That's an institutional corporate duty of candour. Tell the truth straight up when there's been a mistake. Yeah. Let's not be doing exactly what happened in the lead up to the death of Muslims if they were in fair service. A duty of competence, that means that each corporate entity that's providing political services has competent people at the very front line, all the way through the organisation, to the most senior clinician, to understand what it is to intervene to prevent suicide, intervene to assess, and intervene to refer into the right kind of service. And cooperation is, you will see it in the press, you will see it in current reports all too often, that there was a failure to cooperate in exactly the critical moment when somebody was in great danger. So a duty of candor, a duty of confidence, and a duty to cooperate. We believe that they together will make a very significant contribution to educate, inform, and help mobilize the suicide prevention movement to guide the decade down and recognize for what it is, an intimate catastrophe and a national disaster. We had 318 deaths just in the last year recorded. Suicide. 318 people lost their lives, God forbid, by an earthquake crashing into one of our local men. It would be regarded as a bloody disaster. And we regard the suicide death rate here as the rate of something to think about, almost perennial, that we complacently look at the people who do very well. But we're suggesting, with many others in the suicide prevention movement, that we should be doing that. And we'd love your support, and love your interrogation on the creation of those.
Well, Fergus, I want to thank you for your presentation. It is very touching, because when I got into the office this morning, the first thing I was told that we had another suicide in Ballinahinch where I work. Now, Ballinahinch has a big suicide rate, so they have over the last 5-6 years. my neighbour, 3-4 years ago, took her life. Then 2 days later, another friend's son had taken her life. So I'm very aware of the fact that the devastation that suicide has on families. And we talk about legislating. Yes, I totally agree 100% that we do need to legislate, not just for suicide, but we need to start legislating too for mental health, because I believe they're interlinked, because a lot of people have come in to our office and they are suicidal. And I know one young girl 3 years ago there from Ballinhatch was in our office, and I have to say that the government has a lot to answer for here in relation to, for example, universal credits is just coming in, benefits and stuff. People are at their wit's end. And a young girl had come into the office seeking help a few years ago, and they'd messed her about because of benefits. That young girl took her life, 21 years of age. We had another young girl, or another young girl, another lady had come into the office, and our local papers carried this story at the time. So they did. Mental health issues. Crossed the way, didn't want to know. She doused herself in petrol. So she did. Luckily, her hubby was able to put her out. But that's the type of thing. And I do think that we do need to legislate for suicide and that, because you're right. If it happens in Ballinahinch or it happens in Downpatrick, you only hear the one or two incidents over your own area. But when you talk and say over 300 in the whole of Northern Ireland, you know, that's frightening. That is frightening. And you're right in what you're saying. You know, if there was a tragedy, a plane crashing or whatever out there, that is a tragedy. This is equally a tragedy that so many people are taking their own lives. And I would totally support, and I hope, and I'm sure they will, other councillors will support your aims here in legislating for suicide prevention through this bill. And I want to thank you for giving the presentation. So I do. Councillor Brown.
Thanks, Chair. And yeah, Councillor Walker certainly made some very valid points there. And certainly around welfare reform, which is something we've seen a lot from our constituents coming in great numbers, particularly recently. And I think, you know, in particular, the Conservative Party has a huge amount to answer for in terms of the welfare reform and the punitive system that it now embodies. Just over the weekend there, a constituent I've been doing some casework for attempted to take their life. Fortunately, they did not succeed in that. But it's a fact that it affects us all the time. We all know someone who's been affected by it. So the work you do is incredibly important. My first question was, what sort of link-in have you had with any local groups in the area? I know there's many, such as, you know, MindWise. There's the pop-up art project down in Downpatrick there. I sit on a local task group to do with suicide prevention in the area. There is actually a small group of volunteers who have a suicide down to zero working group as well. So Pat McGreevy, you probably know Pat, yeah. So I was wondering what the link in that was with those groups there. And also the other question is, you know, what can we do for you as a council to help get your agenda across practically?
But really, we want to raise the profile of suicide prevention. And suicide is a preventable harm. Yeah? It is a preventable harm. That's one of the strongest things. We really think also that anybody who works intimately with people, and anybody that's on the house at a reception desk, in any kind of public or private enterprise, needs really good awareness training on what to do if they notice somebody who's in trouble, to be able to ask that very difficult question. And to plainly ask the question, and to get around to the answer. Yeah. And so if the answer is, I'm in big difficulty and I can't get help, then I think the next step is to know exactly how to refer and where to refer to. So we're interested in that idea of question, persuade, and refer. That has to be part of it, the basic education. If you think back to before 1986, there was a word of child protection. And there was a lot of misgiving about the possibility of having a really good effect. And now, when the legislation is through, the Children's Organization is here and backwards. It meant that they have mandatory training, mandatory education, and mandatory standards for everybody that works with children and vulnerable adults. So we need, I think, to have mandatory training and support in every workplace. in every educational context, but suicide prevention and intervention, all that is not just general mental health intervention, general mental health and well-being, but be able to notice what the signs might be and ask the question, how are you? Are you okay? And get around the answer. And if the person is really distressed, or you think that you're worried about enough about them, to ask the question, you can take an answer. And to be bold enough to do that. And until we're doing this around our breakfast table, we'll be at a loss for the number of families we work with who say they didn't see it coming in the aftermath. You know, people report in the press, you hear it on the news, that it was a big surprise. And then, you know, some months later, when people had a chance to do a growing experience, they talk about the news, talk about the way it's going. Everybody, some, you know, people in the network have hard to do so. People saw something they didn't quite have a name for. So you have to do the public education work in the advertising campaign, public health campaign, education campaign, but really to ease the signs and to be observant of each other. And so there has been the courage to say, I'm really concerned about you, and ask the question directly to the neighbor. So it's an education to ensure that you're with the person, get them to have their need by calling either directly through to the GP or calling the lifeline. There are ways to do it. Get direct access to the most easy access to the world, to navigate one's way through the complex, difficult business of getting the best kind of support, the best kind of support. So, back to the question of what connection and why we're able to do this, we also provide the share to the all party working group on suicide prevention, which just got off the ground 10 years ago. And it's again the consciousness and the confidence amongst their elected members in the service. So, it's partly why I'm sure some of those conversations. We might be able to pull that type of tension between us. And to support the groups rather than to supersede the groups, those groups that you told them have the radio, Suicide Zero and the PIPS group, and lots of others. They are very big attenders at the Suicide Prevention All Party Group. They have usually 40, 45, 52 for the 10. All party groups often have tendencies to have half of them. This will really caught the imagination. So there's a readiness to engage with in terms of not just the clinical thing where the expertise is meant to lie, but in the engagement thing where people have ready access to family and community. And that means all employment contexts. It means especially a public representative. It means especially district councils who have got now this delegated responsibility and taken it on with some booster around having well-being. Yeah? So to have well-being champions, to attend and engage, to develop a sense of confidence, and to come witness on this journey of thinking about mobilizing to educate effectively on effective legislation that will make a difference to ensure that those of us that have clinical responsibility are doing their job in the tightly, closely monitored way. Not in a blame culture, but in a fair responsibility taking culture. And if I ever leave you with some guidance tonight, if there's a loved one you're concerned about, a family member that you're speaking to because they've come to you for guidance about what to do next, what they saw or not see, or what they've seen, and some time ago they made something different. If any of us were going for a checkup that was really very serious about results from, say, a test for a major illness, like if there was a cancer problem in anyone in the family, one dream of the loved one or go where you stop, have a consultation with a senior clinician where there might be a prognosis as well as diagnosis involved. You would never go without that. Ever dream of suggesting something could happen. Because we all, you know, quake the need, forget what's said, forget to ask the questions that were most important just because we're afraid of the consequences of the consequences of the disease, of the prognosis, of the consequences of the conversation. So just as it is with physical illnesses, whether it's a social or emotional disconnection that results in technological difficulty that may result in diagnosis or mental illness, always ensure that you're insisting that family members with the person having the consultation. And if the medic says, no, you have to stay out of the group, seek the patient's permission, the local's permission to have them alongside you, or have you alongside them, the family member alongside them, so that when there's a need for confidential conversation, the person can ask for that. When it's not necessary, conversation, to have support present to get the best results from that very rare clinical engagement which I've had with technology. That goes for every person that could have an impact on. Our concern is that less than 30% of those residents have seen the mental health clinician or anybody that has spoken to about what they're worried about in the years before. Less than 30%. So that's not just about a taboo about people seeking help. It's about us clinical services having the drawbridge up rather than down. We're not outreaching in a vigorous, compassionate, caring enough way so that people get the message that they should show up, can show up with a loved one. It's very difficult to show up with a psychological disability or a life crisis because they're shaming much more so than a broken leg or a cancer diagnosis or a kidney problem. They're shaming us. And we believe in our work that when people call us and they're trying to get us, the vast majority of people call us and say, I'm not But the circumstances, personal life circumstances, are driving me crazy. You know, they're not in a diagnosable mental health category, but they are in a life crisis that is overwhelming, temporarily overwhelming. Relationship breakdowns, the chance of losing one's job, the hitting the drugs or alcohol to cope in a self-medicating way, these are all contributing factors. And we know that of the men who die by mental health, and more than 3/4 of those who die by suicide are men, and most are working age men, despite the depression. That youth suicide gets the greatest proportion per capita rate of death across the life course are working age men. That's the 20 year old to 55 cap. That's where most of the deaths are. We are the guys that, you know, to do what we've been taught to do. You know, man up, zip up, say nothing about that with respect. So I think one of the things we got wrong these years, and I'll finish on this, and that's you, Chris. One of the things we got wrong is we've been pushing very hard for men to seek help when they're in difficulty or before they get into the worst kind of crisis. At exactly the moment in their lives, men, women, boys, girls, when they're least likely to seek help, least able to seek help, when they feel most shamed and isolated and they feel a burden. So we need to do something different. We need to find a way to support those groups who are doing the surveillance on their behalf, small, public, to become actively involved in that benign, compassionate surveillance, all of us amongst our families and our communities. And finally, the way to develop it, put the courage in the question to ask those questions. And we can work together to do the best support possible on the most relevant side until we ensure that we have a way, including talking and engaging with others. Talking and engaging with others, which we do in the very long time. We used to think on our service that confidentiality was the most important thing to attract. Actually, having talked to tens of thousands of people who've been in the press, the most important thing is to get the help where they need the help, rather than secreting in the service of full confidentiality, stretching the confidentiality limit as far as we can. Any other questions?
Councillor Andrews.
Thanks very much, Fergus. And I must say, I've been very much impressed with your presentation this evening, and I have been impacted myself personally by suicide, and I've seen it firsthand the impact that it has on family, you know, friends and loved ones. You know, and over the past lot of years, life's got a lot faster. There's been a lot more pressures, and you know, there's been so many changes, the pressures and issues, and many have found it difficult to cope. I know it is important, really, that this legislation should get on the statute book whatever way possible, you know. And at the same time, the campaign that came in your head, it's a marvellous, and it's a marvellous, in a sense, it's an advertisement that more or less impacts at the young fella who's the life and soul of the gathering. When his mate sleeve off comes the mask and throws it in the corner, you know, and it is important to get the message out, and it's also important also that government agencies, government departments and bodies, along with health and social services, they need to get more resources. And the fact that the people going to hospitals complaining about symptoms, then ending up the people didn't pick up, and then like less than a short time after that are dead. You know, I think realistically we have to get more resources and to emphasise to people that people aren't judge or jury or laughing at them or think they're funny or whatever. It is important that people are there on a level and that they deserve care and understanding. I know myself, one Saturday night I came out of the quarter of the car miles across Gar, and and they were doing renovations to the church in Crossgar. The scaffolding was up 100 feet. And I looked up and seen a young fella up at the top of the spire. And I'm afraid of heights. And and I went up the ladder and I sat down with him and spoke with him for half, 3/4 of an hour at 1:15 on a Sunday morning. He said his girlfriend had broken up and he couldn't cope with it anymore and he was going to throw himself off. So at that moment I just said, well, what are you going to do? What's the impact? What are you going to do? I know you're heartbroken, but you think of the hurt and anguish that you're going to inflict on your family and on your girlfriend. Do you want that? And I was up and down from a great height and I was scared of heights, but I just to heck with my own personal feelings or whatever. We sat and talked it through and ended up at 1:30 on a Sunday morning, the place was black with people. And I had to say to the police, you keep those people quiet down there. If there's a word said, I just prayed, but he came down. And, I didn't know who he was to this day, but it is important. I think talking is a great thing. But again, as a counsellor, I'm very passionate about mental health and about suicide prevention and all. And your organisation, along with many others, Luke's and Pips and others in the local area and beyond, has worked so hard and tirelessly with limited resources, but there's all to be commended. And there's nothing that this council can do, and in fact, if any local bodies can do, we're there to support these sick and thin. So, especially the legislation, it is important. It's an important roadmap to get in place to send the messages out to people that we're here to listen and to understand and to help them care. But thank you.
Thanks, Tex. Since there's just one more leg on, we'll take Councillor Burns.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, I mean, obviously, it goes without saying, we'll be very supportive, and the sentiments in the room are sort of echoed around all the parties. But I suppose, first, I'd like to ask you more specifically about the bill. I'm guessing one of the key reasons for coming here is to garner a bit more support, that we will go back into our parties and lobby key people. With a view to making this bill a reality whenever we do get stormed up and running. The bill seems to concentrate on the three areas of calendar, competence and cooperation. Having just glanced through the information you give me, it seems very health-driven. What I wanted to know, if possibly, does the bill cross any other boundaries? And thinking education, obviously being a major aspect of the social change that's needed to happen, and the change in attitude, and certainly for somebody who's worked in the likes of youth clubs and stuff, we're relying on volunteers. I mean, we were always very wary of suicide, but almost afraid to mention it ourselves, which is part of the problem rather than the solution. So if you could touch on how the bill will help in that terms of education. And again, there's nothing really there on resource. Presumably, this bill will put into statute the resource in the likes of the lifeline number, which is clearly critical, but as well as putting a resource in long-term to help tackle suicide prevention.
We have concentrated highly on the citizens as regarded by the citizens, that is the health and justice system. There's a disproportionate death rate for people who have come to seek our help than among the population in general. That's natural, that's going to be true. But actually getting it up from joint up services is all the more difficult. Now, that's not about resources. That's more to do about, if you have a culture over a period of 5-10 years that says we haven't got enough, that becomes the mantra. And it creates a kind of cultural shielding in various institutions that say, well, we can only take this and we can't do that. And it, services do it just by osmosis. They do it without thinking. They work with the most easy fixed problems and they leave the more complex, difficult issues to be dealt with on a long list. And that's where massive problems happen in relation to suicide prevention. For those who are living in the crisis. So one of the ways we feel that this needs to be tackled is to take a string out of the bow of the zero suicide movement in the US and gaining traction in the UK, and we have had some involvement with it internationally. And it came from the trust in the Henry Ford healthcare system. Well, they made a decision in the early 2000s that they would
do their best to drive the debt they've done for the people who are then in their care. So in order to do that, they had to have the data. They needed to know how many people were dead every year. And that wasn't generally known. Like, could anybody here have the guess how many people die on the watch of the South Eastern health trouble? How many people die every year by suicide in the South Eastern health trouble? Like, I'm a professional in this area of work, you know, that's reasonable. And I couldn't tell you what the death rate is in your health trouble area. There's something amiss with that. I can tell you the general death rate. I can tell you the death rate per ward almost across the electoral ward. I can tell you that you're more likely to die by suicide by a multiple of four times if you happen to live in an socioeconomically disadvantaged urban area or an isolated and socioeconomically disadvantaged rural area. But I couldn't tell you how many people died by suicide who had attended the matter in Belfast or the Royal Belfast or the City Hospital in Belfast. Do you see where I'm coming to? Until in healthcare, where the people who come with an acute need or a chronic need, they need help. Yeah? Until we in healthcare declare the number of deaths that take place on our watch each year, then you know there's no way that we can drive the kind of service and patient protection systems that are preventative. We can't really be measured against the errors that we're making when we don't know how many errors we're making. So we need courageous healthcare systems that decide that they can drive the death rate down on their watch. And then apply best practice nationally and internationally to do that. And we're partnered up with Mercycare in Liverpool, Cheshire. We're partnered up with the Western Trust, who've got a suicide, zero suicide think tank in the heart of the world. And the South Eastern Trust are considering very carefully, they haven't moved on it yet, but there's resistance in the system. Because if you move in this direction, you'll be judged on your faces, but you'll also be judged on your faces. And any healthcare system that has decided to drive the death rate down and done so with a zero suicide commitment, they've changed the whole attitude. They've trained everybody up, from the admin staff to the caretaking staff to the chief executive to the top psychiatrist, because psychiatry, social work, psychiatric nursing, psychotherapy, general practice, there are no pre-qualification direct trainings that support those professions to be expert in suicide prevention or to assess the suicide intervention. So we're saying that the bill needs to start with the medical and the clinical community so that they have pre- and post-qualification expert training on suicide assessment and suicide intervention and suicide prevention, not just mental health services du jour or depression services du jour, but specific, dedicated, internationally tested, top-rate suicide prevention, intervention, and assessment training. So that's what we have to start where people come seeking help. Yeah? Where people who are most acutely come and seek help. That's why we're saying that you get contribution to help. But there's a cascade out, there's an implication of a cascade out to all of the services. So I'm working with a couple of good principles at the moment. We've lost, in one instance, a drama intervention college in Oma. There have been two pupils lost their lives to suicide, two girls in the last 5 months alone. Yeah. And that school has, services like ours and looked at the lecture class all over them for the first couple of weeks in the aftermath. They said, see, they need aftermath. This is a traumatized school community, a traumatized parent community, a traumatized teacher community. And they didn't have long-term consistent support to deal with the issues that were in there. So what we're doing is, in order to have a safety network for a young person or for an adult, you need to have more than just the clinician involved. And that's why I'm saying the confidentiality has to be rigid and can actually be a risk factor for suicide rather than a preventive. So in our work, we have learned that it's not just this relationship that counts, but it's the relationships around the person who's trusted. So we want to talk to a beloved, trusted loved one, or two or three, and, a tight, strong, clear network that's informed at the level they need to be involved with, informed that is critically important. So say, for instance, in a football club, or a youth environment, if there are kids who've been impacted by a suicide, or there's a child who's got a serious difficulty going on in their life, and they've been acting suicidal, they're behaving in a way that means that they're at risk of suicide, and their school knows about it, and their doctor knows about it, and their mom, or dad, or care, family carer knows about it,
the club environment they're going to will have a designated child protection officer who really can have. They have a need to make choices. Now, no, we're not saying that this should be in the legislation, but we think it should be a convention that's considered very carefully. That the support network should extend to those who know, love, and are trusted around this child. All the known, trusted, and beloved adults around this young person. And likewise for adults. And you only do that by working and negotiating with the person who's in trouble. You don't do it independently of them. But when we push with people who are in trouble, yeah, when people are in crisis and say, we think it's a good idea for you to begin to think about trouble with someone at home who you know and trust and who loves you and cares for, the immediate response is, I was listening to that. But when we explain it, we are explaining that people begin to get the message. So that might actually bring down the stigma, up in confidence, up in support network. You know, get me out of the sense of being a burden to others. And when we've done that, it has created tremendous resource and tremendous confidence around the person who's in the picture. Because you can bet the bottom about it, that even in this room tonight, one of three of us are crisis in this world. We haven't had any of this. One of three of us were faced by a life crisis that could have two had consequences for ourselves. So we need to get this, you know, out of the idea that it's only the expert can deal with it, and that those who are most expert in providing support, love, and care are not the clinician that needs work from somebody once a week or once a month. A psychiatrist might see them once every 3 months. It has to be much more intimate, much more close than that. And that's what we have to do is to create a safety network that works. And they're the aspect to our ways of living in this busy, speedy, you know, environment that we're in that has been fractured most by the pace of change, the pace of the way we live our lives. You know, with a little bit of fine tuning, with a little bit of mobilization, where you can make an enormous difference in a relatively short time. That's my ambition. I think we should be audaciously ambitious about this to bring changes in a relatively short time. And at the Western Trust and the South Eastern Trust, and maybe also in the Dublin Trust, the Trust begins to say, this is the number of people who died on our watch this last year, and we want to drive that out with the death of the children. That will up the confidence of other families and community members about the therapy and the service. And the old adage, or the current, you know, oft-repeated line that's become part of our consciousness. They're waiting lists for everything, the health service is broken, you know, there's no way to get access to that kind of support. That is a myth. That is a myth. We're talking about intervening at the most proportionate level, as early as possible, in the development of crisis. Not at the ultimate outset, you know, extreme crisis level. And there are several available options. So when we talk about driving this value of resources, it's more about consciousness raising, it's more about education. It's not necessarily about tons more money for the work we do. The Life and Service is very well resourced, and we've been protesting about how the public health agency may well want to, you know, change their plans to under-resource, you know, make a budget available that you can't access because it's up the criteria for taking the parents into the service. That's a different argument altogether. Turning the tap down and identifying needs to be the priority. What we're saying is that with a community response, a community attitude that's building confidence from the ground up around social intervention and around noticing, engaging in surveillance and reaching out and doing what your colleagues do, and to answer them. Not necessarily have the time to talk to the people below the church, but to have that good Samaritan attitude and say, I won't pass back. And if I see a distressed situation, I will not pass it back. That will make an immense difference to the overall rate of suicide here and the overall sense of reluctance to engage with difficult situations. The same can be said of domestic violence, the same can be said of alcohol, drug addiction. These are all very focused issues. And their theme that they've addressed in Scotland to some very good effect by starting at the health of justice and education. And I think that's where we need to have those connections, much greater corridor of cooperation between those services, and have that reflected both to the community and from the community. As we get more aggressive about, more assertive about how we demand that kind of cooperation and confidence. So the resource that I'm looking for, that I'm really keen to tap into, is a resource of hope, a resource of possibility, as opposed to tons more, you know, funding to come following the legislation. I think we would do a great deal with what we've got, and we're much more prepared to cooperate with each other and get out of excuse making and address the issues that can be prevented.
Well, Fergus, I just would like to thank you for your presentation tonight, and as that's the end of the business, it just leaves me to wish all my fellow councillors, officers, yourself, Fergus, and our press a very merry Christmas and a happy, peaceful and prosperous new year. And just be careful, but enjoy yourselves over the holiday period, but at the same time, be careful. Thank you.